This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. 9 New Hampshire residents are competing in the Sochi Winter Olympics, among them 8 skiers, including alpine phenom Bodie Miller, who placed a disappointing 8th in this weekend's men downhill competition, and 1 snowboarder. So why does New Hampshire produce so many gifted skiers? Well, perhaps to understand, we need to look back. And joining me now to shed some light is Dr. John Allen, secretary and historian of the New England Ski Museum, located in Franconia, New Hampshire. He's also author of From Ski Sport to Skiing, 100 Years of an American Sport, 1840 to 1940, and the Culture and Sport of Skiing from Antiquity to World War II. Dr. John Allen, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you.
New Hampshire is sending 8 skiers and 1 snowboarder to Sochi. Now, that's a pretty big share for such a small state. What is it about New Hampshire that makes for competitive skiers?
Well, it's had a long tradition. That's one thing. It had one of the major fulcrums around which skiing developed, Dartmouth. And Dartmouth, indeed, is sending a couple of skiers this year, too. And it has always had a number of institutions which lend themselves to the production of good races.
I would think of these Western states with all of their big mountains being the progenitors of skiers. Here in New Hampshire, what about the smaller mountains and conditions? Do people learn to ski on smaller mountains, making them more adept at bigger ones?
No, not necessarily, but New Hampshire has certain conditions which make it difficult to ski, and if you can ski in New Hampshire, then you can ski anywhere. There's also a number of, in our area, New England really, a number of ski academies, and periodically kids come out of those academies. But it somewhat depends on the pool of youngsters that you have. And if you've got a big pool, which we do in the state, then the chances are fairly good.
The history of skiing at the New England Ski Museum points back 22,000 years to the formation of some of these mountains here. What's the evidence of the earliest skiers in New Hampshire? Did it predate European settlement?
No, the first skiers in New Hampshire were individuals who, for one reason or another, found that they could get around on skis. There was a kid, for example, in I think it was Ipswich, who went to school on skis. There were people over in the Hanover area that brought their skis to Dartmouth, for example, occasionally from the west. There was a well-known astronomer out of Hanover who did skiing. And then there were a bunch of Scandinavian, mostly Norwegian immigrants who settled in Berlin, which was called Norway Village to begin with. And so you begin to get various places in the state where odd individuals started to ski. And from those places, skiing grew.
What did early skiing look like in New Hampshire before the big ski resorts and snowmaking and lifts?
Done by very few people. Done out in the country. Don't forget, in those days, there wasn't alpine skiing and there wasn't Nordic skiing. There was only one sort of skiing, and that was you strapped on some fairly primitive sort of wooden boards, and you went out in the country, maybe with your dog or two, and that was about it. They were used occasionally for logging, doctors perhaps, and only when it sort of moved into the bourgeois, did it become a sport.
And when did that happen, in the 20th century?
Beginning late 19th, but basically early 20th century. And, for example, there was some sort of a club at what is now Plymouth State in 1907. The Dartmouth Outing Club began in 1909. And it was really from those sorts of institutions that you begin to get people who have disposable time and wealth to enjoy skiing as a sport.
And where are they coming from, Boston or from the big cities in New Hampshire?
Yeah, mostly from Boston. I mean, one of the reasons why New Hampshire does so well in the early days of skiing is because the routes are direct from Boston. It's very difficult to get to Vermont from Boston. But not to New Hampshire. And so New Hampshire, when the ski areas began, had a real advantage. And if you look at the numbers of, let's say, snow train people coming up in the 30s, you'll find that they all came from Boston to New Hampshire. They didn't go to Vermont or Maine.
So it was in the 30s that New Hampshire sort of became a skiing hotspot. What set it apart from other ski areas in the country?
Well, first of all, it had a large urban population quite near. But they had already an infrastructure in the making. Partially, this was because certain well-known skiers got the ear of the governor, Governor Wynant, in the 1930s, to allow the CCCs, Civilian Conservation Corps, to cut the trails, and B, for example, to build the Cannon Tram. And so they had already a kind of a forward-lookingness.
We're speaking with Dr. John Allen. He's secretary and historian of the New England Ski Museum, about the history of skiing here in New Hampshire, a state that is sending 9 athletes, 8 of them skiers, 1 snowboarder, to the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. So people use skiing for recreation, but how about for competition? Was competitive skiing big in New Hampshire?
Yes. The moment that alpine skiing became popular in the 1930s, what happened was that people joined clubs. And when they joined clubs, clubs like to go at each other. Mm-hmm. And so competition develops. And in one sense, you almost had to be a competitor if you wanted to sort of get in on the ski world because you were a member of the club. And there were different sort of levels of competition, of course. Kids' levels and then adolescence levels, high school levels, and then the club competition. And some of them were really quite well known. There was a club in Boston called the Hockeybeger, and there was the Amateur Ski Club of New York, and there was the Black and Blue Trail Smashers and all those sorts of things. And they really went at each other quite extensively.
How about now? Is New Hampshire still a destination for competitive skiers?
Not really. Immediately after the war, this is after the World War II, mm-hmm. there is a general movement of the focus of skiing from the east to the west. And that was largely because many, many men who had been in the 10th Mountain Division and who came from the east and who trained out in Camp Hale, which is near Tennessee Pass, quite near Vail, Colorado, decided that that was the place they'd like to set up shop afterwards. And there's a sort of almost a mass movement of 10th Mountain people, and they all operate out of the West rather than New England.
What were some of the early judged events in the Winter Olympics, and how were they judged?
In the first Olympics, there were only cross-country and jumping. Mm-hmm. The arguments really were hardly over cross-country, but they were certainly over how to jump and what constituted a proper jump. To begin with, the form of jumping was simply as you would go over a bump, you would pick up your knees. And when the jump became a sort of venue all by itself, then the picking up of the knees, it was called optrekk in Norwegian, the picking up of the knees was the way to jump. But it became apparent quite soon that there were better ways to do it and which would get you further, and that was to stretch up and out so that the new way of skiing began to be judged in a very different way, and it also looked in many ways far more beautiful too. And this became the Riksstandardstil, as they say in Norway. That became the way that was judged.
So what will you be watching for when you're watching the Olympic skiing events at Sochi?
I shall be watching biathlon. I mean, biathlon is the most difficult thing of everything. I mean, everything is opposing. You're running, you're getting out of breath, you're sweating to beat everybody else, and then you have to suddenly stand or lie and shoot straight. I mean, it's phenomenal, the difficulties involved. All the other guys have it easy, as it were.
I don't know if I'd say that, but I thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Dr. John Allen, secretary and historian of the New England Ski Museum that's located in Franconia, New Hampshire. He is the author of several books on skiing, including From Ski Sport to Skiing, that's about 100 years of American sport from 1840 to 1940, and The Culture of Sport and Skiing from Antiquity to World War II. Thank you for joining us today. If you like what you heard, there is much more to listen to at wordofmouthradio.org. And we have a challenge for you. Valentine's is coming up on Friday. And with that in mind, we asked you on Facebook and Twitter for the greatest love and heartbreak songs ever written. We pulled together your submissions and are ready for a pitched love song versus heartbreak song battle. We invite you to cast your vote on which is the better bracket. Among the most popular love songs, Bill Withers' Just the Two of Us, The Righteous Brothers' Unchained Melody, and At Last by Etta James. On the heartbreak side, Bonnie Raitt's I Can't Make You Love Me, George Jones' He Stopped Loving Her Today, and Adele's Someone Like You. So which will win out, love or heartbreak? You can weigh in on our bracket at wordofmouthradio.org, and links to the ballot are also on Facebook at Word of Mouth Radio and at Word of Mouth on Twitter. I'm Virginia Prescott. Join us for more love, heartbreak, thrills, surprises, and satisfactions of your curiosity tomorrow at 2 on Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio.